Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. And this is Carol Levine. I'm Vice President of NASCA. And hold on one second.
It's okay. Goodbye.
Okay. So anyway, okay, I seem to be having an echo here. And I don't know exactly why, but Kim, can you hear me? Kim, can you hear me? Oh, boy. Okay, she can't hear me. Let me put her on right here. Let me try again. Kim, can you hear me?
Carol?
Yes. Okay. Lori, hold on a second. We have a guest. I have a terrible echo on my phone. Hold on a second.
Okay, okay.
All right, now, Kim, can you hear me? I don't think she can. I'm going to put her on hold for a second. I'll have to come back to her. I don't know what happened to my phone. All of a sudden, it just simply died, and that's not a good thing for Blog Talk. But if you can hear me, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Wow.
I can hear you fine, Carol.
Okay, good. Then I'll just work with the echo. I don't know what's going on. All right. As I said, this is NASCA, and what I usually do is I read the mission statement. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. Okay, I got rid of the echo. Are you still there? Yeah, you're still there. Okay. We have a signalance of purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect, and we do so from two different ways. And number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem, which it is, and it does affect everyone. Number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. I mention prevention that way because I think it's really something that we all need to learn how to do. It's very, very important if we learn, you know, the signs of child abuse and we speak to our children. There's just all different kinds of things that we have to do, you know, to be responsible parents. So anyway, first of all, we have Lori Golden on tonight. Lori, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good. Yes. I don't know what happened with my phone. We've had such terrible weather around here. It's 12 degrees out. Isn't that fun? And we have someone, yeah, I know. We have someone from Hackettstown. I want to see if she can still hear me. Kim, can you hear me? She's not answering. I don't know. We spoke for a minute. Maybe she just wants to listen to the show. I don't know. But that's all right. If you're there and you're having trouble, make a call back in, or if you just want to listen, that's okay, all right?
Can you hear
so
me?
Anyway, I can hear you, Kim.
Is that
you?
Oh, now you can hear me. I don't know what was going on there.
Yeah, I was. I'm not sure either. All of a sudden, everything went blank and my phone went dead. So I don't know. She knows it is 12 degrees out because she doesn't live that far away from me. Yes, and I am up in the. I'm on top of the hill in Oxford, so you know where I am. So sometimes I have trouble with my phone. Yeah, I do. But anyway, I'm really happy that someone local called in. Kim, we have people calling in from all over the world at times. We've had people call in from Vietnam. We've had people call in from Jerusalem. We've had people call in from Down Under and England as well. So, but usually we deal with, the United States, but we certainly can, deal with anyone that does call in. And people do come on the show from all over the world, and, they do tell their story. We have something, do you know the website that we have?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know
our
website?
I went through it. Yeah, yes, I did. That's how I found it.
Okay. Yeah. So where it says archives on there, it has, years for the archives, and click onto the archives, you can listen to any show you want. Right now as we're speaking, we're being recorded, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that lists on the front page, in case there's other people that listen to their computers, this is why I'm doing this. I never know until later on where they're from. But anyway, on the front page of the website, it gives a lot of information and also the current show. Like our scan number tonight is 2832, okay? So if you want to hear tonight's show later on, that would be the scan number that you would look up. That's 2,832 shows that we've done where people have called in and told their story. And I started this almost 12 years ago, Kim, I came on, and I never left. And but I've found an awful lot of things to do. There's so many things that people can do, working with NASCA. So you and I had a little conversation previously, and then I lost you. I don't know what happened. But I'm glad you're back again. Now, on Tuesday and Thursdays, what we do, Kim, is we have someone like Lori on. She's a therapist, and she's been a therapist for a very long time. She's also a survivor. And what she does is, we talk back and forth about topics. And I give up the telephone number, which is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And then people can call in. We have a therapist here who's been a therapist for many years. And if they have problems with nightmares, say, flashbacks, anything that people who have, suffer from PTSD, they can ask her questions. So, now, Lori, you can hear me, can you not?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Do you have anything that you'd like to speak about?
Well, Carol, after talking earlier with you,
mm-hmm.
I thought given the climate of today, self-care seems to be such an important topic in general for people, but particularly for survivors. And I just wanted to throw that out, that the idea of taking care of oneself, and with all the stresses that are going on with COVID, I just think a lot of people are having trouble taking care of themselves and finding ways to relieve the whole fear of continuous fear of having COVID escalating again.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's so true. You see what's going on, and I'm sure that, that Kim will also agree with this. Look, we've been told I get so mad. We've been told so many stories about the COVID. You know, it started here, it started there, and now we don't have to worry as much. Then people are saying take the masks off, and then people are saying put the masks on. Now we do know that that there have been quite a few people who have called in, and they have said that you know, they don't like to wear a mask because when they were a kid. When they were a kid and they were being abused,
yeah.
Right? A lot of times the perpetrator would put their hand over their mouth, and they had trouble breathing. They're just little kids, right? And his hand or her hand can be a girl too, can be a woman, right? You know, like so, like covered their nose, and they couldn't breathe. And somehow, when they feel the restriction of the mask that we have to wear. It sort of like brings back flashbacks, you know what I'm saying? And I do receive calls. I'm the night owl, so I get my calls at sometimes 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. People are having trouble sleeping. They need to talk. I like to tease that I put a couple of them to sleep. You know, I do that. I tell them I tell them that I say that too. And they need to hear a voice, from someone who has been through similar, you know, circumstances, because our stories are never always the same. But, you know, the feelings are there. We all feel the same, whether you're a little girl or a little boy. You know, it's as simple as that. And so what you're speaking about with the COVID, okay, with the COVID, it seems like you tell kids to go out and play, and then you think to yourself, well, the COVID, where is it coming from? Is it coming from the air? It's airborne, obviously. Look where it is. It's all over the country again, all this stuff. And schools are closing down New Jersey left and right. And yet you're telling them to go outside. Well, you know, it's crazy and it's upsetting. And people are getting very depressed. Now, this is something that we have to deal with. It's depression of people. And that goes for kids and, you know, adults as well. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago that I had read off some stats of depression and children, for God's sake, especially in the teenage, they're committing suicide because a lot of times, you know, they have to stay home. There's no socialization. You know, they can't go out and be with their friends. And then, let's face it, if mom and dad are the teachers, a lot of times they're not qualified to teach the kids, right? So, therefore, and if they're little kids, heck, I'm home. I want to play. You know, I don't want to do this. You know what I'm saying? So,
yep.
it causes a lot of grief. So, what our country is going through right now, it's not easy. It just simply isn't easy, you know, for kids to deal with this. It's just not easy at all.
I think that if you don't mind me interjecting,
mm-hmm.
I think back to, I haven't really thought about COVID till we're just talking about it now, but I was thinking
mm-hmm.
back to, gee, if I was a kid, you know, back in the day when I was having to deal with my abuse, it would be the worst thing ever having to deal with COVID because, not because of the mask situation for me, but because my freedom of being able to go to my friends and get away from my father would be limited.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to be stuck
Absolutely.
At home. I would have had no... I mean, that was the only way I got away from him, was to be able to go to my friends. I was constantly staying overnight at a friend's house or going to my grandparents' house. And, that just would have been horrible for me, not having some sort of escape from getting away from him.
Right.
So I think about
yes.
all those kids that are going through that now. You know, that's probably what they're going through. You know, they're stuck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's also creating a lot of anxiety in younger people. The uncertainty, I mean, it's really spiked younger kids and teens with anxiety, not depression,
mm-hmm.
yes, and suicidal ideation, absolutely. But also anxiety has been increasing, like it is in
mm-hmm.
adults. And I agree with you, by the way. If I was sexually abused by my father, if this had happened when I was a child, it would have been horrifying. I don't
yeah.
know what I would have done, because there
yeah.
was no getting away
right.
anyway. So put
mm-hmm.
on top of that something like COVID, and I just can't, I mean, it would be horrifying. And Carol, yes, the masks have caused, I mean, I have spoken to a number of people that have feel that the mask is suffocating. And
yeah, I could see
some
that.
People don't have memories necessarily of sexual abuse or other kinds of abuse, but yet have this panicking feeling when they put the mask on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so hard for people that are suffering from abuse. And
you there?
I think we just lost her.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Gloria, are you there? Yeah, we're losing you. We're losing you. I don't know why, but maybe she's calling on another phone or something. I don't know. we're having a little rough time here tonight. Lost me first, now we're losing you. But Kim is here. Yes, she is. Maybe I'll let her on the show.
I'm here.
Yes, you are. Okay. So,
can you hear me?
She's still
cutting in
and
out.
No, we can't. Yeah, you're really cutting in and out badly. I don't know why.
I don't either. Okay.
Nah. It might be a blog talk. Sometimes, you know, they have problems. I don't know what's going on here. But I can continue on, and you can listen, and maybe your phone will straighten out. I hope so. Maybe you should try calling back in again, Lori. I don't know. We have trouble with blog talk at times. And, wow, one night I had a whole bunch of people on. And, God, it started doing its thing, Kim, and you can't do anything about it. You know, I just said, fine, everybody, call back tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know what to do. You can't, some things we can't control. But, you know,
yeah.
what we're talking about with the masks, okay, that's a heavy, because I receive these phone calls, and a lot of times people mention that. So it's not an easy thing that we're going through. And then people who have, you know, that are suffering from PTSD, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, when we're going through so many hard times in our country, like we're going through now, okay, you know, that just makes their PTSD worse. Now, you did share
mm-hmm.
with me that you, too, are a survivor, and we'll talk later on or tomorrow. Maybe I'll call you right back after the show if that's okay. Is that all right?
No, that's fine. And I don't mind sharing on the show, as you know, either. I've been through many, many years of therapy, so I am, you know, it's fine. I'm fine to talk about it.
Well, that's good. But what we
can
do
you
here,
hear me now? Wait,
yeah,
guys,
now I can
hear
you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Okay.
Okay, that's
back.
Better.
What did you just share with Kim? I missed that part.
Kim is would like to come on the show and share her story,
mm-hmm.
which is wonderful. And I'm so happy that I have someone so nearby. You know, she's in Hackettstown and I'm in Oxford. And, you know, it's not that far away. So, anyway, it's nice having someone nearby. It just is. But point is, she'd you know, like to be a part of the show, maybe even, and that's wonderful. It'd be good for her. It'd be good for everyone too. You know, we all we have a lot of members But right now, even our members, a lot of them are having problems, you know, because they have kids. Like my grandchildren have COVID right now, and I'm just freaking out.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, schools are shutting down. You know, so a lot of them have already shut down, and you know, so it's we're living in very tough times. So people who have, you know, nightmares or flashbacks, you know, other type of post-traumatic stress disorders, they're just flooding. You know, they're flooding to call. We have a contact list. You probably saw that because I have a funny feeling you've looked over the website. And on the contact list, yeah, I know you did. That's cool. I like that. you know, there's a list of names. You've seen me at top. I'm the night owl. All right. So
yes,
the
night owl.
Yeah. Maybe I even know you. I don't know. But anyway, the point is, you know, yeah, I get all kinds of phone calls from people that are just really, really upset right now. And we can't change. We can't change, you know, what's going on in the world. We can't change any of it. The only thing we can do is change ourselves, you know, how we're going to deal with it so that we don't become so depressed ourselves. You know, I try to listen to, you know, rock and roll music. I'm heavy into that, you know that. And I love rock and roll. And so I'll play the oldies. I have Alexa playing it. And I'm dancing around my kitchen. I don't care if anyone hears me or not. You know, my neighbors.
Right.
I really don't. And during the summertime, the windows were open. I was singing up a storm and someone said, "Go, Carol, go." I was embarrassed. I didn't look outside to see who did that. But you know, we have to find things to keep ourselves occupied. Otherwise, I sit, Kim, and I look at the news. I can look at the news for 3 hours straight. I go, oh my God, and I get so mad. I scream at the TV. And then I feel, well, that sounds stupid. So you know, I'll go busy myself with something. But, yeah, and when it comes to, like, I would love for you to tell your story, but not tonight. I'd love to have a night that's special just for you. Very soon, actually, I could do that, okay? And where you could tell your story, and, you know, again, we're all survivors on this show. So there isn't anything, you know, that we don't know about. You know, it's as simple as that. So I will call you after the show, and we'll talk about that. And you have to write a little bio of some sort. And in the bio, what we want our people to do, I think you already know what I'm talking about from the sounds of it, is you write, you know, about your abuse a little bit and say where you're from, you know, and you can give out some information in that bio, whatever you're comfortable with. And then you talk about what you're doing today. Yeah, how are you surviving today? You know, if you're working or if you're part of an organization or if you wrote a book or if you're working at schools or whatever. It could be anything. Or, you know, you're going to a therapist, you know, all this stuff. And you can look in the archives, and that gives you an idea of how to write the bio, all right? You know, because people have to have bios. But anyway, I would love to schedule, you know, have you come on soon. And tell your story, and certainly give us your last name, and you know if you feel comfortable with that, or if you just want to go by Kim Delaney. I don't know what I just came up with that. You know, whatever. I make myself laugh. That's what I do. I think it helps keep me somewhat sane. But anyway, you know.
Actually, laughter does.
Oh, I love to laugh. Lori knows.
Yeah, laughter does keep you sane.
it makes the spirit feel better, okay?
Yeah.
I try to seek out movies right now, you know, that are funny, that aren't without being goofy, you know, but funny. And, you know, try to keep myself in a better frame of mind because we can't change what's happening right now. You know, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow or next week or, you know, 6 months from now. We just simply don't. And make sure, all right, I'll continue to wear my mask, okay, when I go out. even though I've had the shots. I'll wear my mask. It doesn't seem to matter anymore. And I'll wash my hands a little more often than usual and use the sanitizers. That's what I can do. So that's what I'll do. Okay?
Yeah.
That's what
yep.
we can do. Yeah. You know.
All right.
So, you know, what else? What would you like to speak about, Kim? Are you having any, you know, like bad dreams and things like that right now? Is there something that you're going through?
No, I would say, I mean, I'm in a good place. You know, I've, like I was starting to say, I've had years and years of therapy. I'm like 62 years old, started therapy at 24, and was in therapy for 3 times a week for probably 10 years. So, and then, you know, have through the years, you know, gone through times of depression where I was reliving some stuff and having to kind of go through the depths of, you know, figuring it out. And, but, you know, for years now I've been, you know, happy, and I feel like I'm at a place where it doesn't consume me, or, you know, it's not in my daily living anymore. But I have for years now wanted to write a book or share my story to help other people. And I've started writing a book. And when I start writing it, because it's very detailed, and I start from the beginning of when I was molested, and then I start feeling feelings, and I've even gone to a therapist about that. Like, look, I'm trying to write this book and I'm having all these, you know, anxious feelings coming up. And I had one therapist tell me, he said to me, you know, there's a lot of books out there. You don't, you know, if you're trying to write a book, it's sort of like, you know, putting yourself in a spot where you're going through it again, and you don't really need to do that. There's a lot of other people that have written books. And then I'm
right.
like, yeah, that's true. And then I'll go for years and not think about it anymore, but it's always there. It's always like, I feel like before I die, I need to let people know that they can survive this, that they are going to get better. They are not going to stay stuck. And, you know, and just share with them, like, my journey. All I can remember is that when I started dealing with this, when I was 24 years old, I started having anxiety attacks out of the blue in my car when I was driving to work or when I was driving home from work. And I'd have to pull over the side of the road, and I didn't know where they were coming from. And it got so bad that I got sent to I went to my pastor, and my pastor told, you know, I told him everything. I was like, you know, I'm 24 years old. I was molested when I was a child from 4 years old till I was 16, and blah, 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 blah. And I was just like, it came out of my mouth like diarrhea. And he was like, I'm going to take you to Dr. Fernandez's office, which is the psychiatrist right across the road. And, he did, and that's kind of how I got pushed into therapy, you know. And the of course they wanted to drill right in on the, you know, the incest and my biological father molesting me. And I don't understand how that's going to help, you know, like, it happened, it's already over, you know, now I'm an adult, like, I don't understand. And, you know, little did I know that it was going to be years and years and years of therapy after that to, you know, deal with what happened to me. But,
you know, Kim.
Don't say too much, because I
you
want
just,
you to come on the show and tell your story.
Okay,
right.
Sorry.
You just, now, Kim, you brought up something important. You just said that, why do I have to look at this? I know what happened, had you always remembered that
yes,
you were abused?
I can recall, even to this day, the day it happened, exactly how it happened. I can tell you that through, you know, until I was 24 and started having the anxiety attacks, I put it out of my mind, but I never forgot it. And when it started coming, when I started having the anxiety attacks, I remember thinking, like, did that really happen to me? Like, I knew it happened to me, but I didn't want to admit that it happened to me. And after I became a parent, when my first child was born, that's when it really hit me. Like, how could somebody be so horrific, do something so horrific, you know, to their child. Because, you know, here I had this innocent, beautiful baby in my arms, and then it just, like, came full force. And I was like, how could somebody be so sick? And, you know, that's a lot of where my, when, you know, when all of my, a lot of my therapy had to do with is, like, how could somebody be so sick? How could he do this, you know? And, like, it just, like, I spent years on that. Like, my father also wanted me to forgive him, and he wanted to, you know, have dinners and wanted to get to know his grandchildren. And I had him in for, sessions with my therapist, and, you know, there's a whole story there, too, but...
Kim, we got a 619 area code. I don't want him to think that I'm ignoring him. who am I speaking to? 212, that's New York. That's what I know.
Yes,
that's New York.
Yeah. Who am I speaking to? 619, I'm not going to say any more than that. Hello, hello. Okay, this person maybe just wants to listen. Okay, go ahead. Didn't mean to interrupt, but, you know, when the calls come in, I have to acknowledge them. You know what I'm saying?
That's
Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. I'll put that person on hold. They might just want to listen. Go ahead. So you were talking about your, your therapist. But don't, like I said, I want you to come on really soon to tell your story, because it's important that people hear the whole story. And then, you know, one thing I always say is that at the end of the story, when they see that everything's okay, then people, it gives them hope, Kim. It gives them hope.
Well, yeah, right? That's the whole reason, like, where I feel like, you know, I really want to do a book. And if it's not a book, I have some other ideas for a nonprofit. I want to do something to give back and to let, and just for people to know, like, I have a beautiful, happy life, you know. I've been married 3 times. The first two were cheaters, but I've been in my third marriage now for 22 years, and I'm the happiest I've ever been. And, you know, I have horses, and I have a good life, and the abuse does not consume me anymore. Like, you know, it doesn't. But I went through years of, I still remember when I started therapy, and I thought, okay, this is going to take like a year or two. And then it got to the point where my insurance ran out because it wouldn't cover any more sessions of therapy. So then I said to myself, you know what? This is painful. This sucks. And I don't know how long this is going to take, you know, because it just kept taking longer and longer. And I said, how am I going to pay for this? I can't pay for it. And I went to a women's crisis service who did free counseling. And I was allowed to go as many times as I wanted per week. And I started going 3 times a week to this counselor that I bonded with. And I did most of my work. I mean, I went through 2 other counselors before her, but I did most of my work with her. And I also made my father pay for a lot of my therapy that I couldn't pay for. Because I thought I can either take him to court and put him in jail, or which he'll just get out, or I could make him atone for what he did to me and pay for therapy. So I made him for probably 6 of my 10 or 12 years of therapy, I made him pay me a monthly check to pay for my therapy.
Good.
And
good. I like that.
Yeah, no. He did.
What's amazing is that he cooperated.
Well,
you
don't
find
that.
I mean, so. that's not frequent.
That jail, yeah. I don't think, was too was sitting too cool with him. But, you know, the other thing was I was fortunate in the fact, because I went to several groups, and I saw, you know, women there that had perpetrators that, you know, and fathers and stepfathers that, you know, never admitted that they abused them, and they thought they were crazy. And I know this is going to sound weird, but I felt fortunate that my father never denied that he did it to me. The only thing that happened was when I brought him into therapy with my therapist, and I had everything written out that I wanted to say to him, and I read it, but I was bawling my eyes out the whole time. And afterwards, I couldn't remember if I was 4 or 5 when he molested me. And I asked him that in one of the sessions, and I said, was I 4 or 5? And he said, I think you were closer to 5. And he said, and I asked him why, and he said, it's like it wasn't really me when it was happening. He said, it was like I turned into somebody else. And now this is around that he was asking for forgiveness. He wanted me to forgive him, and he wanted me to, you know, have dinner with him and have meet my, he wanted to have his grandchildren in his life, which I told him was never going to effing happen. And, when he left, and I was so hung up on it for years about how am I going to forgive this man? Like God tells you, you know, if somebody slaps you on the right side of your face, let them slap you on the left, you know? And I went to my pastor about that too for a few times to have sessions. And the pastor said to me, Kim, the fact that you didn't, go retaliate against him and do something horrific against him is you forgiving him. It doesn't mean you have to go break bread with a man who is sick and is a predator. You know, you don't need to put yourself in that situation. That's not what God wants. But the fact that you didn't go after him and, you know, slash his tires or, you know, send a hitman after him, you know, that's
right.
Forgiveness because
mm-hmm.
you could have.
That's right.
So that helped me a lot. And then when he left those sessions, my counselor said to me, she's like, I just want to say, you know, that I don't think it would be a smart idea for you to forgive him to the point where you have dinner with him. And she said, and the reason why is because he didn't take ownership. He admitted that he did it, but he also was saying it was like as if it wasn't me. So
right.
That was his escape. It's like as if it wasn't him, which means that he could just – that's going to be his scapegoat every time, you know? So I ended up getting to the point where my group and I had a burial for him. We buried him while he was still alive.
That.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get
that's,
it. I get
that's
it.
That's a very common practice, actually.
Yeah. I was like, I'm done. I stopped taking his checks. I called him. I said, my therapist said, Kim, I think we're at the, I think you've, you know, we've done all the, you're good. You know, like, I know
all
that you're scared. Yeah, but you're done with the work. And, so I told him I didn't want his checks anymore, but I never wanted to hear from him again. I never wanted him to write me, call me, nothing, and that he was dead to me and that we buried him.
Right. Well,
and then
I
didn't
like
hear
that.
From him again. And then he died, and I didn't go to his funeral.
mm-hmm.
And,
you know, that happened to me, Kim. I went to confront my father in 1989. And I told him that I would not go to his funeral and that I would never be in a relationship with him again. And
mm-hmm.
he said, I said, I came here for myself, not for you. I came
mm-hmm.
here because I needed to speak from my own truth. And,
right.
you know, and that was really important for me to be able to
mm-hmm.
confront him, even though he called me psychotic. He said, I can't
mm-hmm.
believe you work with people. I mean, you know, he did a number on me. But, you know, I'm curious about your desire to write a book, because I did write a book, and Carol wrote a book, and it was really important for me to do. And don't get me
right.
don't. I mean, it was not easy, and
mm-hmm.
it brought up a lot of stuff, but it still was really important for me to do.
Right. That's how I feel too. And I just, for years now, it just like keeps, it's always there in the back of my mind, like a silent voice telling me, you have to do this, you have to do this. And then I was like, well, do you get a ghostwriter or do you write it yourself? Like, I don't even know how to go about it.
That's right. Yeah.
You will discover how to go about it when you decide that this is something you really want to do. You'll get clear about it.
Yeah.
Did you write it yourself? No, I wrote it, but then I had somebody work with me on helping me kind of get some of the kinks worked out. It was quite an involved process.
Right.
But I think what's important is for someone to say that there's a lot of people that have written things already. It doesn't matter if there's a lot of people that have written things. If you're yearning to do it, then that's something you need to do for yourself.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's always my yearning to do it is always based around how lonely I felt in 84, when I first started dealing with this, and there was nothing out there. I mean, now there's all kinds of literature on it, but the only thing I could find at the library, because we didn't have computers back then, was the voices, Victims of Incest Can Emerge Survivors. They had a little newsletter that came out like once a month, and I found that, and I swear to God, I couldn't wait for that thing to come every month and just read the few little articles that were in it, you know, about that made me feel like I wasn't alone, because I truly felt like I was alone and I was never, ever going to feel better or normal or, you know, happy. Like, I just didn't see at that time how that was ever going to be possible. And it sucked, you know, and it's like, I just want people to know, like, it does get better. They're not going to stay stuck.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. See, a lot of us have gone through incest, unfortunately. I did, too. And, I got mad. I used to watch O'Reilly. Remember when O'Reilly was on? Remember?
Yeah.
There was this case up in Vermont where this guy had been, you know, sexually abusing a little 8-year-old kid, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And a boy. And I just became so angry because all he got was probation. That was it.
Yep. Yeah, they don't
And I got
anything.
So mad. I got so mad, Kim, I decided I'm writing a book. And it only took me 28 days to write a 314-page book. And
that's
I think
amazing.
I'm like, I'm a night owl anyway, so I just went, brrr, you know.
Right.
Let me tell you something. I didn't know how to write a book because I never wrote a book before either. But I started thinking back to English class, okay? And remember how we used to do those outlines? We had to do outlines.
Yeah.
And all these, so I started thinking, well, all right, I'll have a topic, and then A, B, C, D, you know, under that topic, and then A, B, C, D, under that topic, all the way down, right? And as I was doing that, I was formulating in my mind my story. Okay? And that's how I wrote my book. My book made it all the way out to Japan, for God's sake. I didn't even realize it.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. I had one bad review. She wanted to kill me.
What?
She wanted to kill me
the
pen, okay? One bad review. And there's always going to be one bad apple, all right? The others, I got wonderful ratings. But the point is, I personally didn't have any emotion when I wrote the book. It didn't make me feel better. It didn't. I just went,
Really?
I was abused. Yes. I was abused in the family, outside of the family. I was kidnapped and raped, all kinds of, when I lived in New York, and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, it's there's so much. That's why there was 314 pages, right? There was so much to write about. And it wasn't filling. It was things that happened. And then into my, you know, into my marriages, because I was married twice. The first marriage was horrific. He was the father of our children. But the second marriage wasn't that good either. I mean, we had our good times, so I have at least good memories to look back on in my second marriage. And so it wasn't nearly as bad. And he died from 9/11. Oh, yeah. He was an electrician in New York City. And he was breathing the air in all the time. It was supposed to be clean. Hello. All right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, oh, my God. By the time he was diagnosed, he had cancer 3B already. And that's fatal. So,
yeah.
It went on for years with him. So, anyway, and then finally it got too sick. So, the point of the whole thing is, you know, it's really, really crazy. It's a crazy thing, you know, to sit and decide. I had to sit my children down and tell them that I was going to write a book. I had to do that. I wanted to do that. Because there was a lot of things that... Huh?
Yeah, that are going to come out. There's things that are going to come out that you
That's
want them
right.
to... Yeah. Be ready
them
for.
To understand. Yeah, I wanted them to be understand. I don't know if you're in the same position or not, but I had, you know, I have two children, and of course I was going to mention their father and the times we went through them, and they weren't, you know, pleasant, and you know, and so forth and so on, and my childhood, and they didn't know that I had been so abused and all this other stuff. They had no idea. And even in the family treated them well. So it's confusing to them. Mommy says this, and we know this, you see. So it was like, rude. I have to sit these kids down and get them to understand that I lived a life before I gave birth to them, okay? And it wasn't pleasant. So these are the things that, you know, when you write your book, I used a lot of different names because some people were still alive, and I didn't want that, you know, to include them because I didn't want them, you know, they were innocent and so forth. So you have to think about things like that, you know, when you write a book.
Mm-hmm.
Or
how do you get a publisher to even look at your book, though? Like, I feel like that I could write a whole book, and then it's still hard to find anybody that wants to publish it, right?
Well, when I published my book, okay, I didn't know how to go about that either. So I went to this, in Pennsylvania, in Easton, I went to this library, and they had all publishers in there, people who had written books and who were still writing books and so forth. And I started asking questions. I did some networking there. I did some mingling and learned the ins and outs. And quite frankly, to self-publish is easier, yes. But on the other hand, you have to be careful. The first company I was with, all right, in 2008 I wrote my book the first time. And when their legal department, now see, 2008, they weren't really talking about child abuse the way that we speak about it today. They just simply weren't. So, you know, people are going around the room and people are standing up talking about what they wrote about, and oh, some are writing about vacations, isn't that nice, okay? Others are writing about butterflies or whatever, and then they come to me, all right? I go, oh, my God. There's nothing that even comes near child abuse, all right? Well, I stood there like a trooper, and people who know me know that I'm a pretty rough lady, and I just stood there and I told my story, not my whole story, but I told them what I was writing about, and giving them bits and pieces. Well,
right.
They didn't make a name tag for me. Okay?
Oh, no.
They didn't make a name tag for me because I wasn't writing about butterflies and vacations and dogs and cats and all this other stuff. So, you know, what I did was I went a few times to this book club because I still need a little more information. And they gave me the name of, which is no longer in existence now, the first book company. And I did very well with them, and they were very honest. And they thought, they wanted me to make a trailer. And so I said, well, go ahead and make the trailer. I had to pay for that, though. It was $1,400 to make that trailer. And I said, but
wow.
I want to see it. I want to see it before you release it, all right? Well, it didn't get that far. And they gave me the $1,400 back. They, like I said, they were honest. That was called Book Surge. And they're not around anymore. But their legal department, now this shows you the difference between, this is why I'm mentioning this, 2008 to today, there's books like ours all over the place now on Amazon, okay, and also
right.
in other places. You know, they're all over the place, Barnes & Noble.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in there also, only a few books, though. So anyway, the point is, you know, things have changed, though. So we are making progress.
Right.
So if you look up, and I'll explain that to you later, but there is a, you know, a way of finding publishers, you know, for books, and they'll give you a whole list, and that's how I found my publishers, okay? And I just simply chose the first one, and they said that my material was too volatile. They weren't ready for us then. They just simply weren't.
Right.
They were not
yeah.
ready for me, honey, all right? No way. So, okay, so... Then Author House picked me up after that. That's another one that people use. But, you know, it's Author House, they sort of like gave out my information to a lot of different publishing companies, which I didn't expect.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, maybe that's how I got to Japan. I don't know. I haven't the faintest idea, you know.
Right.
So, but I'll tell you some things about that later, all right? Probably maybe not on air is appropriate. But so, but that's what you do. That's how I did with my book. I just simply, you know, did the outlining like we did in school with the topic on top and then A, B, C, D, like we had to do, and then topic two, blah, 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 and I just put it all together because I didn't know how else to do it
right.
either. And
yeah.
it works. It does work. So I don't know. I had no emotions when I wrote that book. I just simply didn't.
Wow.
I didn't feel
That's
better.
Amazing.
And I didn't feel worse. I felt nothing. But I was so mad at the show on O'Reilly that I felt better about that. Okay.
Right.
Because I wanted people to understand this is what we do on our show. Is to bring forth the awareness and how it affects a child, you know, negatively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And but that there is hope, and that's how we do that.
Right.
At the end, you know, you say, you know, how you're feeling today and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and then those people that are listening right now on the computers, there's many listening on the computers, there's a way of doing that, you know, have to just call in. But anyway, the point is, you know, it's educating them, too, if they're thinking about writing a book.
Right.
You know. So
exactly,
it's
and I'm sure many are.
Yeah. Oh, no. And look at all the books that are out there. And then people, what I do like today is that people write their story, they write their book, and then also, too, they write a workbook. And, you know, like, if
right.
they say, like, they're a therapist, like Lori, or some of the others, you know, psychiatrists we've had on, we've had other people on. And then you have, like, counselors, and I've done a lot of counseling in my time. You know, we have all different kinds of people come on, and we
mm-hmm.
do an awful lot of talking about, you know, awareness and how it affects the child and so forth and so on. So people understand. They have a better understanding today. But look at all the years it took.
Yeah,
because
yep.
even in the mission statement, if you know, I read the mission statement. You heard me, you know, offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested, all right, interested
mm-hmm.
in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. See, it's a worldwide problem, and what we have to do. And you're a survivor. You went through what you went through, and you survived it because you're still standing, okay? And you're thinking about writing a book, and you want, you said, mentioned before that you'd like to help people, which is a good thing. This is
right.
how we get our voices out, Kim. This is a good thing. This is how we get our voices out. And that's why, one of the reasons why it's grown so much since 2008
right.
to today's day. And then Hollywood came out. And, of course, when Hollywood comes out with all kinds of stuff, people, oh, they all have their heartthrobs and everything. I have my heartthrobs, you know. You know, so, you know, so, like, I was going to have Friends come on. Remember when that sitcom was on, gals, it was called Friends, and it had David.
Yeah.
Jennifer Aniston. Wanted to bring Brenner, I can't quite say his name.
Yeah.
I can't quite say. Yeah, you know who I'm talking about, though. He was tall and he had dark hair and he was cute.
Yeah, Jennifer.
Well, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So anyway, I wanted to bring that person on the show, but unfortunately, his was very confined. It was just for the Hollywood brats, as they were called. Those kids. If they wanted to get better parts in pictures, in movies, say, what do they have to do, you know, in order to
right.
get those parts? A lot of them had been sexually abused and all this other stuff. Now, I'm not putting it down because that's unfortunate, and that means that they're, you know, were sexually abused too, many, many children, and in order to get better parts. And, you know, that's a shame. But this is a worldwide problem. It shouldn't be just zeroed in. Yeah.
I just, like, don't understand, like, sometimes, like, how sick our world is, like, our society is with, you know, sexual perversion. Like, it's just, it's rampant. It's everywhere.
Yeah,
it's just,
yes, it is.
I don't, and then, you know, I get to the point where I'm like, you know, are these perpetrators, like, born with some dysfunction? Like, how do they, you know, like, how do you get to a point in your life where you can do this to people? Like, it's just, I mean, I'm glad I can't figure it out because I finally learned that, too. I'm sure you guys have, too, when you were in your recovery. Is, you know, I'm glad
yeah.
I can't figure it out because if I could understand it, I might be like them. And, even my own, I have two sons, like all of them, I have five children. I have two stepchildren and three children of my own and two sons and a daughter. And I told them at a very early age that I was molested. And the reason I told them that was because I wanted them to understand that if anybody touched them inappropriately, they needed to come to me right away. But now that they're in their 30s and they're both having children, my one son called me and he's like, Mom, like, I am having, like, severe anxiety because he had a daughter. And he's like, what if I'm,
yeah.
like, your father? Like, what mm-hmm. if I have some genetic thing? You know what I mean? He was, like, freaking out. And I was like, Chris, the fact that you're even worried about it means that you're not. Because if you were
right.
like him,
right.
it would be exciting you. It wouldn't be making you anxious and throwing up.
Really,
you know, but,
really, yeah.
But it affects,
yeah.
you know, your children, too, because they, you know, they just, they feel like, so not only do they, you know, dislike my father for, and they never met him because I would never allow that, but, you know, not only do they dislike him, but they dislike my mother, who's still alive, but she's got Alzheimer's now and she's in a nursing home, but, you know, the fact that she didn't protect me, you know, and that's another thing is that, you know, when she never admitted that she knew anything about it, but, you know, I'm a parent now, and I've raised five kids, and let me tell you, if anything was, like, going on like that in my household, I would have known. So,
yeah,
you
right.
know, that was another reckoning that I had to come to is, you know, realizing that my mother was just as responsible in not protecting me and having to go through that whole, you know, realization. But
right.
it's one way after another, just trying, when you think you got one done.
No, let me tell you what. Yeah, a lot of times, sometimes, I'm not going to say a lot of times, I don't want Lori to speak, but a lot of times...
It's okay,
you know,
I'm listening.
No, but you're the therapist that's been around for like how many years? Is it 35 years? 35
yeah.
years.
That doesn't matter.
But anyway, what I started to say was, you know, a lot of times the wives are aware of it. The mothers are aware of it.
Of course they are.
And you know what? Either it's out of fear because they're scared. And a lot of times in those families, I don't know what it was like in your family. And don't tell me because I want you to tell your story. So be quiet. But anyway, but like, okay, like in my family, and my mother, she didn't care. I told her and she didn't care. Her answer to me was, this happens in a lot of families. And that was the end of that.
It probably did happen in a lot of families. Do you know that I was reading a book?
Yeah, but there was no help.
I can't remember. I know. It sucks. And it's such a sick society. I was reading from one psychiatrist who wrote about, like, how children that are molested by their biological father, especially, we have, like, the biggest obstacles to overcome because, you know, you had nobody. You didn't have your mom. You didn't have your dad. You had nobody. And, you know, the trust factor and trying to, you know, sort all that out and trust a partner in your life. He was talking about how perverted, like, our society was. And I remember this. He said, do you know, he mentioned this, and I forgot all about it, but there was a comic book called Chester the Molester. Do you guys remember that? Yes.
I don't remember that.
Chester? Yes, I remember it because my brother and I used to go to the corner store and get comic books all the time. And I remember there was a comic book called Chester the Molester.
Oh,
that's how freaking sick our society was, and it still is. And, like, I don't, you know, I'm at the point now where I've even thought about going to the governor and, you know, I've even read into New Jersey state law where they had a similar law where they were going to make all sexual predators get chemically castrated, which I think should be done. California has been doing that for years. There's like at least 10 states in the United States that have been doing that for years, chemically castrating predators. There are some societies and countries that actually castrate them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't even wait for the guys to get take hormones to be chemically castrated. They actually castrate them. They take off their sack. So,
I hear you.
You know what? I'm not against that because why should children continue to be subjected to, I mean, these are family members. This is your father who you're stuck with till you're 18. You know, I actually left home when I was 16. But, you know, why should we be subjected to this sickness? No matter why they're like that. I don't care if you're like that because you were molested or beat from when you were a child. You know, if you're going on and you're a sexual predator and you're continuing to do it, you know, day after day after day for years and years and years, that's not right. Like, something needs to be done.
It's not right. It absolutely is not right. And I agree with you. Okay?
That's
but
crazy.
Then you have all those sympathizers, you know, and saying, well, that's to castrate them, or, you know, isn't that a little severe? Well, what about we, the survivors?
No, that's not severe. It's severe to make people like
my
us.
My abuse started when I was 6, and it lasted until
exactly.
I was 17. All right, so
and some people don't
people.
Ever, and some people don't ever come out of it. Some people are so traumatized. You know, I remember when I was going through it, it was the most painful thing that I ever went through. And I remember saying, if it takes me, I was 24, and I remember saying, if it takes me 30 years to get through this to a point where I'm not in pain anymore, I'll still only be 54. So I'm going to do it, you know. So it's like I'll do whatever I had to do to make sure that I was a healthy parent for my kids. And so there is no excuse. You know, if you need to be chemically castrated, then that's what you need to do. take responsibility. Well,
you know, let me tell you what. They had a show on, okay, some years ago. I've mentioned this before, and I don't know if you saw it or not. I'm not a huge Oprah fan, but I used to watch her at times. And I happened to tune in one. It was during the course of her closing down, you know, getting off TV. And she had a couple of shows on that were very interesting. And one was she had nothing but, you know, rapists on the show. And
I
there was
watched
no audience.
It.
Did you watch it?
I
you
watched
saw it.
It.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Now, you know that she went to those guys, and they had therapy, right, and
mm-hmm.
so forth, and some had been in prison, and not one of them could say that they were safe to be around children.
That's right. And
yeah.
they were, and I think there was one or two that were chemically castrated, and they said if they weren't, that they would
yeah.
100% abuse again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's
so,
right.
I mean, they know that the you know, people that come out of jail or whatever continue to re-abuse. So I just don't understand where, this is going to sound bad, but unless the senators and the governors are they're probably predators too, and for whatever
yeah.
reason they don't want to pass the law. But I mean,
well,
why
else? I will say something, Kim. That's an excellent point, because it's people in power who are also perpetrators.
Exactly.
That stop the it's first of all, like, sex slavery is such
mm-hmm.
a big business.
Yeah.
So it people are paid off all over the place for that business to be thriving the way it's thriving. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, judges, there's a lot of people out in society that are supposed to be respectable people that aren't.
Mm-hmm.
They're perpetrators.
Exactly. That's right. They all protect each other.
And that's a shame.
Yeah.
That's a darn shame.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, that's why we have certain laws that we can't get through, like the statute of limitations. Now, there are some states that have passed the bill, absolutely. But a lot of times they run into problems, you know, passing this bill, because there's predators in the way, like you said. Laura,
mm-hmm.
you said,
yes.
And you said also, Kim, that, you know, yes, you're right. And
they
get
predators.
In the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
there's predators
in
every occupation.
Absolutely.
And in every economic strata.
Yep.
You know?
That's true.
That's disgusting, isn't it? It's a shame to look at what our kids go through, you know?
Yeah.
But all we, you know, what we can
do,
I'm not going to say all we can do, but this is why it's so important that we, you know, tell the parents, talk to the children, you know, the good parents.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing, right, Lori? The good parents.
Yeah.
The ones that care, you know what I'm saying? The ones that care and the ones who aren't perpetrators themselves, you know what I'm saying? To sit their children down, and we have, you know, when those red blocks that go across our NASCA website, each one has a title in it, and there's a lot of articles on how to speak to your children, what to say, what not to say, when to start talking to them about their bodies, and not to, you know,
mm-hmm.
not give them funny names. We had some a guest on the other night, and you know, that was saying, don't, you know, tell your children that your vagina is called a cookie or something. You know what I'm saying? Because
right.
well. There was some time ago, I just snorted, I was laughing so hard. There was some time ago that someone had come on the show and said that a little girl had gone into class and went to a teacher that she felt comfortable with and said, my daddy was eating my cookie last night. Well, the teacher didn't know what she was talking about. You see?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if you give them these weird names, children have to know that, you know, and you'll know when the time is right, because if you're giving a child a bath and they say, mommy, daddy, what's this, what's this, what's that, what's this? Yeah, tell them the truth. This is your head. This is your nose.
Right.
This is your chest. These are your breasts. This is your tummy. This is your vagina. If it's a little girl, your vagina. And so forth. The same thing with the boys, only this is your penis and so forth. Don't tell them. Don't tell them goofy names like coochie.
No.
Excuse me. That's one that's been used so often, coochie, instead of vagina.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
My older son
gives his son's an avid reader. He's 7 now, but he's been a big reader since he's been little. And I'll never forget the day I went over there, and he has a sister now that's 2. But when she was younger, and they had to change a diaper or something, and I was over there, and he's like, "Oh, you should really cover up Naomi's vagina."
Like,
that's awesome, because they give he has books that are, you know, they give him books that have the body, you know, and they say,
that's
this is
right.
your penis, this is your vagina, this is your boobies, you know, and he knows
and
all
that's
the
what
terms.
They are that's what they are Ken.
Yeah, that's what they are, exactly. So, you know,
I mean,
you
people
book,
today
let
are
them
saying
learn on their own.
Right, that's another thing. And, you know, people are writing books like that now. That's a good book, you know, type to write. So, because we need even more, where they can be used in schools at certain times. But you see, here's another problem. Here's the problem, because I've looked into it. A lot of times people want to go in and speak to young children, you know, about inappropriate behavior from the adults and so forth, what signs to look for, all these things. But in a child language, so that they'd understand. And but they have to send a letter home to the parents.
Yep.
And that can cause a roadblock for 2 reasons. Number one, maybe they come from a home where they're being touched by the parents.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. And, and number two, then they have those parents, they make me so mad, because they say, I want to keep my child innocent for as long as I can. Well, we don't live in an innocent world. Okay. And we're doing a disservice to our children. That's what we're doing. And
well, I mean, I know CASA has, you know, a program where they go into the schools. Are you familiar with their program? And they talk to kids. Now, the problem, I talked with them, and they wanted me to go to the schools and stuff, and I didn't do it, only for the purpose that I dug into it a little further, and I said, okay, say you have a kid, I have a kid that comes up to me and tells me his father's, you know, or her father's, you know, molesting her, and I report it, because then you're mandated to report it.
Right.
So I'm going to report it. And then I said, what happens to the kid when the father says that he's not touching her? Will the kid get put back into the house? Will the father be pulled from the house? No, we can't guarantee that. And I'm like, what you're really saying is that the kid's going to be put back into the home where now they're probably going to be beaten for saying something. You know, like, I didn't like the program. I just said, until you can fix that problem, you know, where everything is broken. You know what I mean? Like, these kids get pulled from their house. It shouldn't be the kids being pulled from the house. It should be the father that gets pulled from the house. The kid should be believed. What kid comes up with, you know, I'm being sexually abused at 5 years old? Like,
that's right.
Right. If they're saying it, it's true.
Well, and they display certain types of behavior. And then as mandated reporters, I mean, teachers, if they suspect that, they're supposed to report it. You know, kids coming out with words that are too sexual, and to adults. And I knew of a little girl who was actually rubbing against furniture because, look, you know, our bodies respond to stimuli. It just does. If it's bad stimuli, you get spanked or hit over the head or something, you're going to respond to that. And whereas if it's sexual, if the person that grooms them and then also, too, ends up sexually abusing them, is gentle with them, she or he doesn't know that it's wrong. They just think, because they'll say, this is how mommy or daddy I always have to say the mommies in there. Mothers are not looked at enough. But this is how mommy and daddy show you that, you know, that we love you. And it's a good feeling. All right? So then they equate that with, you know, the feeling, the rubbing and the stroking and all this other stuff with love. And the children don't realize until they get on the schoolyard, like I did, okay, hey, that's not right, okay? You know, that's not what's supposed to happen at home. A lot of times kids learn that way, you know, in the schoolyard, you know, what's right and what's not right. Hey, I know Johnny's mother is touching him funny places, huh, Johnny, huh? And then all of a sudden, boing, oh, it's not right, you know. And then what?
But,
you see?
Yeah, but
and then what?
But then the perpetrator stays in the house. That's the part I can't get my hands around.
I know.
You know, like
that
my father
happens
was
a lot with that happens a lot with Child Protective Services.
Exactly.
It really does.
It
really does.
Me nuts.
It's a lot harder to prove. And for the child to speak out against the parent is terrifying.
And that's why they won't do that's why I didn't do it, because I knew I wouldn't be believed.
Right.
My father told me I wouldn't be believed. He told me he'd kill me. And he was abusive.
Right.
He used to hit my brother and I, too. So, yeah, I believed him. I would be killed. And now, to this day, you see that that's what would have happened. Had I spoken out, I would have been put right back in the house, and I would have got the shit beat out of me. You know, so I kept my mouth shut, and I just tried to escape the best way I could, like staying at friends' houses, or I even ran away to Canada once, stole his truck, went with a friend, got stuck at the border, and they sent us home, and then I got the shit beat out of me.
Yeah.
Right.
Unbelievable. Yeah. It's just ridiculous, like such a broken system.
It is a broken system. And I don't know what it's going to take to put it, you know, together, to put it the right way, because there are so many problems, so many pedophiles, you know. Look what happened at Penn State. Look what happened at Penn State, right? All those years. And those, a lot of the teachers knew what was going on with Sandusky. And they just kept their mouths shut, okay? And he had power over people. And then those poor kids that he was working with, they came from very bad homes. A lot of them, they were, came from poor homes. He had a program for the indigent, you know, kids that came from poor homes. And, you know, so those kids were being horribly abused. And I believe we had, I'll have to ask Bill, but I'm pretty sure we had his son on at one point, Sandusky's son, who's adopted. Yeah, yeah. I think we did, didn't we, Lori? I seem to remember that. So I think that, you know, it's everywhere. And I always tell people this. I've been saying it quite a bit because it's something that I happened to run across about 3 years ago now, maybe 4 years ago. The Huffington Post actually had female teachers. We were talking about this the other night online. I was talking to some guy about it. But anyway, and the teachers a lot of times, like he pointed out, they're, you know, you go to school, you go to college, and you're not very old when you become a teacher. A lot of them are pretty and all this other stuff. And they want to work with children, and because they're prey, just like with a guy, the prey is, you know, children. And so when the kid goes home and says, "Ooh, Miss or Mrs. So-and-so, you know, thinks I'm special, and she put her arms around me and giving me hugs." Sometimes people are so ignorant. The father goes, "That a boy, that a boy." No, it's the beginning.
Yeah,
it's the beginning.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there's
it's not normal.
No. Now, there's not as many female predators, pedophiles, sex offenders. They all go in categories, depending on the age of the kid. But there's a lot of them.
Yeah, but there are. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're looking at the Girl Scouts now, too. It's not just Boy Scouts.
I was wondering when that was going to occur. Mm-hmm. Because
it's being looked into
in every organization that has.
Yeah, just like the gymnasts, right?
Yeah, uh-huh. In every organization, large organization. I mean, let's face it, people want to work with kids that are perpetrators.
Yeah.
So a lot of these organizations do hire people that are perpetrators.
Yeah.
Not everyone, but they still, you know, one perpetrator can mm-hmm. molest or do more to a child. I mean, the numbers are high. Like I know with my father, I know he has been involved with lots of different kids, not just and my niece, you know, my niece, my nephew, my, you know, brother, myself, my sister. But that's, it doesn't stop there.
No.
Yeah.
It often doesn't.
No.
And they can be exposed to many kids throughout the years.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. In fact, I don't know if you know this or not, Kim, but I speak of this often too, but I want people to get it through their head. Because the first-time offenders, Johnny, Joe, Jim, Bob, whatever his name is, down the street, he got caught for the first time, doing certain things to children that were inappropriate, and then it went as far as, say, raping a child. He goes to jail.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Some people had stepped forward, and so he got, you know, maybe a couple of years, but he's still considered, you know, a first-time offender. Well,
mm-hmm.
what people don't realize is studies show that that person had offended many times, but this was the first time they got caught, okay?
Caught,
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you see, they may be tier one or first-time offenders, but on the other hand, they've offended many times. In fact, they say as much as 128 times they can't offend. That means 10 times with one kid, 5 times with another.
Yeah.
You do the math, it doesn't matter. But you come up to that number, okay? So that's a lot of offenses, and he's still a first-time offender.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's the first time they're caught.
Yeah. Really, really disgusting. But this is the world we live in, and we are making progress. We absolutely are making progress, and we're doing that by writing our books, by writing our songs, by writing poetry, whatever we're doing, our artwork. A lot of people, when I was doing presentations, when I was allowed in schools, for God's sake, I had one of our NASCA members draw pictures for me. Make a picture of a little girl who's standing there with her head down, and, you know, she's been beaten, and she's a wonderful artist. Make a picture of this, make a picture of that. And I took 3 or 4 pictures, you know, to the presentations, and people were actually taking pictures of her pictures.
mm-hmm.
They'd come up with their phone, and they'd take pictures. It was really, and, you know, she was so flattered, you know. And she does sell pictures at times, but not pictures like that. You see, not pictures like that. She is an artist where she makes pictures, you know, of landscapes and the ocean and beautiful flowers and abstract, which makes hers different. But I asked for her to make these pictures, you know, and she, you know, did that. So, I mean, we have all ways of, then we had a horse farm that used to come on, okay? That was in PA. I don't remember their name anymore. It was years ago. And in their program, they had social workers and stuff, but also, too, they allowed for the kids to, you know, to mingle with the horses and to ride the horses and to brush the horses and, you know, with an adult nearby. And they found that they considered that to be therapeutic, you know, to calm the child. You know, and they could walk around the farm and be with the other animals too, you know, and so forth. And that was a farm that was out in Pennsylvania, way out in Pennsylvania. And I don't remember what.
Yeah, there's one. There's a farm like that does that in Chester, I think, too. So I actually looked into that because I have horses, and I was thinking of doing that. But, yeah, you become certified. You have to have a certified handler and then a certified therapist, like an actual therapist like Lori is, that is experienced with horses, you know, to work with the children. And they do, you know, while the child's working with the horse, the therapist is working with them, and it, you know, it helps break down the barrier so that they can talk more freely. And I think it's a wonderful
program. Yeah, animals
are
great for that.
It's a it's a good thing, and kids respond well to that, and they need very much to, you know, to relax and to know that there's beauty in the world, and there's love in the world, and you know, they just have a way of communicating well with the, you know, with the kids. And of course dogs do too. They use a lot of dogs a lot of times, and cats. I have a cat. I'm sure she's quite brilliant, and I taught her how to say bah when she's mad at me. Now I'm sorry I taught her. She's got this nasty meh. And now I go, why did I do that? So I don't know. But anyway, we're coming to the end of our show. And I'm so thankful that you called in, Kim. And our 619, I guess he or she just wanted to listen. At one point I lost them. I don't know. I mean, they didn't go off the screen, but they were silent. So I think they wanted to listen.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're listening or whether you're being a part of the panel, that's fine. It's getting the word out. Maybe you learned something tonight. I don't know. And we're always glad when people call in. And we never know who's going to call in, where they're going to call in from. But I can assure you this, we do have a show Monday through Friday. And again, on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, people come on and tell their story. And if we do have a panel, what they do is they, you know, if I'm running the show, I stop them a couple times from telling their story so that they can engage with the panel. They might have questions, right, or want to make a comment. And so we do that, okay? And then, of course, we get to the end of the story, and, you know, and that gives people hope because you're still standing. I always like to use that term, you're still standing, because a lot of us have been through horrific lives, and they don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm still standing, all right? So I just know I'm standing. I have the big mouth, so that's all I know. But anyway, you know, and I this is my mission, and the people on NASCA, it is our mission to get the word out one way or another, to keep working with it, and, you know, do what we can do to help society to understand the magnitude of this problem. So important. So, Lori, I want to thank you for coming on tonight, and I'll see you next
month. At least I made it.
Yes, you did, by gosh. We had a little conversation before, and you did a fine job. Yes, you did. I'm glad you came on. And, Kim, it's nice to know I have a neighbor not too far away, you know, who wants to come.
Definitely.
Yeah. And maybe sometime we could meet in Hackettstown and have a couple of
calls. I'd love to do that. Yeah.
So I'll give you a call. Do you want me to call you tonight?
I think tomorrow would be.
Yeah.
Tomorrow would probably be better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll give you a call tomorrow, and we'll talk about you coming on the show, and about other things, and then maybe in a couple weeks when I'm not quite so busy, we can get together. That'd be nice.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Okay.
I would love to meet you.
It's a nice experience, by the way, Kim, to share.
Yeah.
Your story on the show.
That's why I figured, you know, I'd start with the show and see how I felt about sharing a little bit, and maybe it would get me closer to that book.
Well,
and that
well,
is
right
exactly
here.
The way to go about it.
Yeah.
Well, once you tell your story, you become a NASCA family member, okay? And you can call in any time, Monday through Friday, okay? I have to end the show. So thank you so much, you know, for coming on.
Thank you.
And I'm waiting for the music to start because that usually ends the show.
Yeah.
We had a little proper blog talk tonight, but at least we had a good show. Yes, we did. And all right, I'll start the music. And good night, and God bless, and I will call you tomorrow, Kim.
Okay, sounds
before
great.
Before the show, around 7 p.m., would that be all right?
Yeah, that's any time is good. I work from home, so during
okay,
the day
great.
And the evening, and any time is good.
Okay, that's great.
Okay.
Okay. Okay,
bye,
thank
guys.
You. All right, good
all right,
night,
thanks,
everybody.
Lori. Okay.
Yeah, Sam, thank you. Bye.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye now.
Blog Talk Radio.